The Fringe Podcast, Season 2, Episode 3.
Hi, my name is Josh Jackson, and you're listening to The Fringe Podcast.
In 2008, three friends were compelled to do a podcast about a TV show they'd never seen. These friends promptly added to their team a walking Wikipedia, a chemist from the scientific underground. Today, aided by the ramblings of a wacky Canadian, they survive as voices of insight. When you have a theory, if no one else will listen, and when you have questions, you can call on The Fringe Podcast.
Hi, and welcome to The Fringe Podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Clint.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Jason.
And we are glad that you have joined us for this episode of The Fringe Podcast, where we are going to be reviewing the latest Fringe episode called The Night of Desirable Objects. However, before we get into this episode, we do want to do a little bit of... Jason, what's the word here? We just want to cover, I guess, one of the scenes from the last episode, which was A New Day in the Old Town. We got a lot of feedback about this particular scene. It's the scene where Charlie is in the boiler room with the nurse and that whole thing there towards the end of the episode. We got a lot of feedback this week with people still questioning it. It didn't make a whole lot of sense. And even in our last podcast, we were still a little bit confused. So we spent a little bit more time this week and looked at it again and talked about it some more. And I think we've got a timeline figured out. But I do want to read this feedback we got from Cameron in Glendale, California, because it kind of encapsulates a lot of the feedback that we received this week. And Cameron says, there was an issue with the shapeshifter soldier in the boiler room taking over Charlie's body. When the shots were fired, the other team came running and find Charlie standing over the nurse's body with the gun. It's true that the nurse's body could have been in the laundry basket and the shape-shifting soldier could have just pulled her out. However, the clothes on everyone's body magically swapped. Watch the beginning of the episode where shape-shifting soldier first shapeshifts. He's still wearing the original clothes that he had on from the accident. Putting that into perspective, in the boiler room, shape-shifting soldier had the nurse's outfit on. He would have had to have undressed, put the clothes back on the nurse, undressed Charlie, put him in the laundry bin, and put on Charlie's clothes. If you have any theories, I'd appreciate it. And I think this was a very confusing scene for a lot of folks. So, Jason, do you want to kind of recap the timeline on this issue?
Yeah, hold on a second. I'm having to deal with the baby here. You go ahead.
Okay, I'll take care of it then. The timeline goes something like this. Now, this is picking up the story when shapeshifter soldier gets to the hospital. So he gets to the hospital, he kills the nurse and dumps her body in the boiler room, transforms her into her. And then now the nurse goes into Olivia's room. That whole scene takes place. And the shapeshifter jumps out of the window and goes back down into the boiler room. And from there, we see her hiding up in the pipes, and we see Charlie there. Now, the next thing that we see is Charlie shooting. But there's a whole bunch of stuff there that happened that we did not see. So what happened was shapeshifter sneaks up behind Charlie and strangles him. Now, you might remember one of our listeners from our last podcast wrote in and said that she thought that Charlie's neck, when he got thrown into the incinerator, had some markings on it. I went back and looked at it, and absolutely, that's true. Charlie was strangled. Okay, so back to the story. Shapeshifter's in the pipes. She comes down, strangles Charlie. Then she has time to put the thing in the mouth, do all the shape-shifting, change all the clothes, okay? She ditches Charlie's body in the laundry bin. Then she takes the nurse's body, because the nurse was already there, and puts the clothes back on her or whatever, and takes the body and positions it how she needs it to, and she busts up the shape-shifting device so that the team will believe that it is the shapeshifter, plants the shape-shifting device at the body of the original nurse, and shoots the original nurse. That's where we see Charlie shoot. That's really shapeshifter Charlie shooting the original nurse, which brings Olivia and Peter onto the scene. They see the device there. They believe it's the real shapeshifter, and they go on about their merry way. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Okay. So hopefully that will clear things up for folks to account for all the body swapping, the time that would have taken, and all the clothes swapping and all that stuff. So hopefully that'll take care of all that confusion. One other thing I want to talk about before we get into the episode is I want to apologize for the audio quality of last week's episode. Basically, I had thought that I had done some wiring that turned out would make our podcast sound better. And as it turned out, it was subpar to what we normally put out. We got a lot of complaints. Maybe complaints is a little bit too strong of a word. Just a lot of folks were letting us know that they were having difficulty listening to it and that the quality was not good. One guy in particular who is a friend of mine on Facebook and is a sound engineer type of guy sent me a message giving me detail on what he specifically thought was wrong, and it was a wiring issue. And I let him know that I did do some rewiring. And in fact, we had to, if you remember, we had to rewire one wire right like seconds before we started the podcast. So I'm really not sure which one of those did it. But suffice it to say that I unplugged everything this week except for the mic that Clint and I are using here in studio and rewired everything from scratch. So hopefully this week we'll have a better quality sounding podcast. And I just want to apologize for last week. And thank you for those who listened to it, even though it didn't sound all that great. All right. And with that, Jason, are you back yet?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right. So with that, let's get into a little Fringe binge.
Okay. Last week we had the Emmys, and Fringe was up for Outstanding Special Visual Effects for our series, which was the pilot episode. It did not win. I believe Heroes won that category. So that was a bummer. The big bummer, though, was that they weren't nominated for other things like actor in a series, but maybe next season. Anna Torv, she looked really nice. She was a presenter along with Kiefer Sutherland. And I don't know, some of the pictures I saw during the show, I was wondering what Kiefer Sutherland was looking at.
I think it was pretty clear what he was looking at. Anna's dress didn't leave much to the imagination, shall we say. And he was taking full advantage of that.
But did anyone know? I was looking and I never saw two things. One, I never saw a ring on her hand, and I didn't see Mark Valley around. And I was just,
well,
I was curious about that.
Oh, let's not start that rumor now.
No, I'm not saying anything. Maybe she didn't have the ring on because it clashed with her outfit.
Yeah.
Maybe Valley wasn't there because he was busy.
Right,
with his new show coming up on Fox.
Right, right. And maybe she had a ring on. The pictures I saw, I couldn't really tell one way or the other. So,
or this was the alternate Anna Torv.
Maybe so.
And that one is married to Mark Valley.
Yeah, perhaps. All right, I wanted to give a shout out to David Wu, who is in our chat room right now. Hey, David. David, for those of you who are new to the Fringe fandom, we wanted to make you aware, if you're not already, about one of our favorite folks in the Fringe community, and that is David Wu. And you can find his work at David Wu, that's W-U, music.com. Each week, he does these great Fringe parodies. Well, he will take a song that you probably have heard on the radio. It might be, 20 years or so. It might be a current song. And he will actually recompose that song himself. He does all the music himself. And then he does, it's him. He's got the Fringe Monks, which are chipmunks like Alvin and the Chipmunks, where he'll take his own voice and do some processing on that to speed it up. And he does a great job parodying each episode of Fringe. So go check his stuff out at davidwoomusic.com, and you'll find out that he is just an extremely talented guy. And you can also, he's got the Fringe Monk show that he has just started new for this season, and they are doing periodic episodes, and you can find a link to subscribe to that in iTunes, and you can find that link at davidwoomusic.com.
I got two more things real quick.
Okay.
Let's not forget every Wednesday we have the Fringe Report.
That's right.
On Ustream. It's 9 p.m. Eastern. You can find them on Ustream at thefringereport.com, guys. Is that how?
Yes, thefringereport.com. Their Ustream channel
is... Follow them on Twitter.
Yeah. Their Ustream channel is the-fringe-report.
Yeah. And also, we have some ratings. I go to Zap2It for my ratings for the shows. And they had a 27% loss over the premiere, season 2 premiere, versus this week. So it kind of took a dipping. It was probably because Grey's Anatomy and other shows had come back on. But according to Fox, they're not worried. This, along with Bones, is doing exactly what they want them to do. And they're quite happy. So as long as Fox is quite happy, hey, we're all happy.
Yeah, I think it had more to do with the other shows premiering this week. Grey's pretty much dominated their 2 hours of television.
Yeah, it will too. Continue to until it gets kicked off the air.
All right.
And that's
any other
all I
Fringe
have
Binge?
For Fringe.
Okay. Well, let's get into our Bunsen burners. And we had a lot of folks in our chat room this week. Kind of like Fringe's ratings, our ratings were down this week too. We didn't have as many in our chat room this week. But we still had a lot of people giving us their Bunsen burner ratings. The Canuck gave us 5 creepy bald Schmeagles.
Fringe Fiend gave us 5 flying froggies. Man, that's hard to say for me.
Bedlam gave it 5 hanged men.
Bryant 54 gave it 7 bubble farts.
Seabass gave it 6 bowlers.
Little Hill with the ones as L's. Wait.
Yeah.
With the L's as ones.
Yeah.
Gave it 6 peed in the gene pools.
JCK034002, 5.567 mirrors.
The Fringe Report as a whole, I guess they got together and had a discussion, but they gave it 7.5 SSMRBs, which is Super Scorpion Mole Rat Babies.
And Red Viking gave it 7.5 peed in gene pools. So we had two people give the peed in gene pools. Courtney, what was your rating this week?
6 coffin holes.
All right. Jason?
6 tub toots.
Tub toots. I said awful. I give it 4 flying frogs.
I give it 7.
The lowest ever?
Yeah, that's probably your lowest,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is my lowest ever. Yeah. Clint?
I gave it 7 size 8 bowling shoes.
All right.
But that's only because I had to, because I gave last week's 6. And this was better than last week's for me.
Okay. All right. And
I just have to say it. This was the absolute worst episode of this season so far.
Of both of them?
Of both of them.
All right. Well, let's get into our episode recap.
Okay, we open with some construction workers near a cornfield. One worker realizes he forgot his gear and heads back to get it. And of course, because it's a TV show, he has to walk right out into the middle of the creepy cornfield that looks weird, so that nobody can see him. And because of that, he disappears into a nasty dirt hole from a creepy, weird hand that grabbed him. We come back and Olivia is being checked out by the doctor. Peter's with her and gives her a ride home. As they're walking out, we see Gnarly watching from a vehicle across the parking lot, and Peter turns around because his sixth sense is telling him somebody's watching, but he doesn't see him. We cut back to a new scene, and construction worker is underground, and it looks like he might be missing a leg. He brings out his lighter and starts trying to crawl away, but the Schmeagle thing catches up, pulls him back, and looks like probably kills him, judging by the horrible sounds. Peter and Broyles are walking down the sidewalk. Peter wants to know if Broyles got everything on his list, which in itself is odd that he's ordering Broyles around. Peter gives Broyles a case that he discovered while looking for disappearances like Olivia's, and Broyles tells him to go take a look at it. Walter and Astrid are recreating Olivia's accident as Olivia walks in, and Walter says no matter how many times they do it, they still can't get the frog to disappear. He launches into his deja vu theory again, and Olivia confesses that she doesn't remember where she went. She just knows she met with somebody and that she did go somewhere. Walter tells her how upset he was, then slips in that she appears to be fine. From that, we learn there might be hidden after effects of her traveling. The three musketeers head to the cornfield to investigate the construction worker's disappearance, and Olivia notices a weird noise but can't figure out what it is. Olivia calls Gnarly for a favor. He says he'll do it, but he has an errand to run first, and it turns out to be a hot date with a typewriter and a mirror. Peter and Olivia are looking through the case files for the other missing people when Walter learns the substance from the site is a paralytic from some sort of human male. Olivia finds a connection to the cases, and back to Pennsylvania they go to talk to one Mr. Hughes. When they get there, they go inside Hughes' house, and Olivia's super hearing kicks in again. She thinks she hears somebody scurrying around upstairs, so she goes to investigate. She finds nothing, but she has herself so worked up when Peter startles her at the top of the stairs, she turns around and almost shoots him in the head.
And from there, Olivia and Peter decide to take Hughes in for questioning. We learn that Hughes was once a doctor. He lost his wife and son during childbirth 17 years ago. Hughes refuses to give a sample of his blood, and Broyles decides to hold him 24 hours so that they can get a court order. Olivia goes back for a checkup, and Nina comes in as Olivia is getting dressed. She tells Olivia about someone who can help her deal with what she is going through in the aftermath of her ordeal, and the man's name is Sam Weiss. Back at the farmhouse, Jessup discovers a Bible with a newspaper article about Hughes' family's death. She thinks he may have killed his wife and son. Astrid arranges an exhumation order. At FBI headquarters, we see Hughes fashion a noose out of wire and hang himself. At the exhumation site, they discover the son's coffin is empty and that something has dug its way out of it. At the lab, Walter discovers Mrs. Hughes had lupus and was unable to produce offspring. Walter also says, quote, "the grave of a boy who is not in his grave." Olivia and Broyles are in a parking garage, and she hears the conversation of a man who is all the way on the other side of the distance of the parking garage, and she also remembers the fly that she heard earlier. At the lab, Walter examines the afterbirth and finds scorpion and perhaps mole rat DNA. He thinks that Hughes did it trying to allow the baby to survive against his mother's lupus attack. At the farmhouse, Sheriff Golightly is taken by creepy mole rat boy. Olivia and Peter arrive at the house and find a couple of hidden rooms. In the basement, they remove parts of a wall and discover lots of teeth, carcasses, bones, and creepy mole rat boy's lair. Creepy mole rat boy attacks Olivia and drags her off. Creepy mole rat boy attacks Peter. Peter stabs him with a bone fragment, and the boy tries to dig his way out, causing a cave-in, and he is crushed by the sheriff's car. In the car, now with Olivia and Charlie are in Charlie's car, and they are talking about her foggy memories. Charlie tells her that her secrets are worth remembering. He tells her that they'll deal with it together and that he'll help her remember. In the lab, Peter shows Walter the Night of Desirable Objects lure and tells him a story of a boy who wanted to go fishing with his father but ended up fishing alone. Walter misses the point of the story and thinks that Peter's talking about a friend of his, and he asks to go fishing with Peter and his friend. Olivia is now at home taking a bath. She begins hearing the bubbles burst. She hears neighbors talking, flies buzzing, and she decides to go see Sam Weiss. She goes to the bowling alley. He asks her if the headaches have started yet, and she says no, and he says they will. Back at the typewriter room, Charlie types in that Olivia remembers no details and receives the message, unacceptable. If she can't remember on her own, then do something to help her out. And that is the episode. All right, and with that, we will get into a little Wiki's Science of Tomorrow. Wiki's Science of Tomorrow! It's still echoey.
It's really, it seems to get echoey. I know it's not, but it seems to get more echoey every time.
All right, let's try this.
I'm sure we say that every time.
We have not practiced this. Okay. You don't even know about this. But I'm going to say wikis, and then let's do Science of Tomorrow together, and let's see how this sounds, all right? You ready? Wikis.
Science of Tomorrow.
What do you think?
That was absurd.
Was that absurd?
It was pretty much obscene.
Now, Courtney and Jason can't hear that. They don't get the echo effect.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, guys. That was like, you really missed out.
I used the effects on my mixer to give us a super echoey effect.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, Science of Tomorrow. Right. Since I think we've got comments coming along that will say basically the same thing, but we've now seen this basic transmutagenic species theme on three separate episodes. Now, this is the third episode that we've seen it. We saw it with Unleashed, and then we saw it with the, I can't remember what the name of the other one, but we saw it, or the one where it turns into the werewolf, Wolverine Man.
Well, that was Unleashed.
And then we saw it again with the copy of The Host. I forget what
that
one.
I can't think of what that one's called either, yeah.
So, so this is the third time we've seen it. We've already talked about all that, so it's a little difficult. But what I'd like to talk about is hyperacusis, which is it's an actual disorder that deals with hyperactive hearing.
I think my kids have this. They have hyperacusing. Is that the same
thing? No, that's not quite
the same. Or they're
always
accusing the other one of doing something?
Hyperacusis.
Oh, my bad.
Not accuses.
I see.
It can be caused by a lot of different things, head trauma. You know, some people think that there's a link to autism, causes some wires to get crossed in the brain. But usually it has to do with susceptibility to high sensitivity to certain frequencies, not all frequencies. For instance, somebody may not be bothered by a loud rock concert, but the frequencies of conversation may really bug people out. So we'll put a link up on the website to the Wikipedia article, and you can read all about it. Obviously, the reason we're talking about this is because Liv, man, I cannot talk today. Liv developed her own case of hyperacusis this episode.
I'm
curious to see how that plays out. So
yeah. It seems like it's not so much that noises are so loud they bother her, but that she is acutely aware of the smallest sounds that are around her.
Right. And I think Sam Weiss asked her if the headaches had started yet.
Right.
And we saw, this is almost a complete, we'll probably get into this later, this is almost a complete rip off of Heroes. When Siler, I don't know if any of you guys follow Heroes or not, but Siler killed somebody who had that ability and then took that ability, and he developed super hearing, and then these headaches followed because his brain couldn't process all the noises. So I think, that was kind of a shout out to this or vice versa.
Interesting. So that's it for Science of Tomorrow?
That's it for Science of Tomorrow.
All right. Well, let's get into a little food for thought.
Root beer float.
Butterscotch pudding.
Mr. Papaya.
Fruit cocktail. Coffee yogurt.
All right, Jason, I think you're kicking us off on this segment today.
Did we lose Skype?
I don't know, did we?
I'm here.
Okay.
One point that Jason wanted to bring up was, and Clint, you made this point last week, and it just didn't click with me. I mean, I heard you, but I just didn't click with me. And that was that the X-Files was actually on the TV in the first victim's house. And so that if a TV show of the X-Files is on, then the X-Files can't exist in the same universe as Fringe.
Right.
Right. And that's just all that it is. Yeah. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm back.
All right. Did you have poop on your hands?
No, I got taken over by aliens. I was put on a ship.
Oh, awesome.
And I told them I didn't want to believe, and so they brought me back.
I see. Well, we were just talking about the X-Files. I was trying to take your first point there since you weren't here. Do you have anything did you hear what I had to say about that?
Yeah, I heard that when I was trying to fix this stuff. This is the point that was brought up by the French report that I heard on Wednesday, and I was like, man, this is too good not to be told. So I was almost convinced when they were talking in the first episode of the season about the X designation along with the Fringe division, I was like, how long until we're going to see Mulder saunter in? I mean, they're stepping into X-Files bounds as it is. And then, I mean, I never put two and two together on that until they brought it up. Like, it's hard for Mulder to walk in saying that he's with the X-Files division if on the TV the actors David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson are on TV. So yeah. I was like, oh, that's awesome. So that's just the first part of our foray into the X-Files versus Fringe, I guess.
Well, I have been irritated with everybody comparing it to X-Files because not everybody has seen X-Files. I haven't seen, well, I've seen a few episodes, but I can't sit here and compare it to Fringe. And so when people keep saying it's just like X-Files, it's just like X-Files, I find it really irritating. I think that we're just seeing similarities to X-Files because that's what people want to see. If we really probably wanted to try and compare it to Lost, we could probably find similarities to Lost. We could probably find similarities to Heroes, especially with this last episode sucking so bad. But but I think there is nothing new on TV. It's just the same old, redone. So we're going to find similarities in to just about anything, unless it's something like, you know, Family Guy. There's nothing like that. But for the most part, it's all been done. So we're always going to see similarities. Plus, if there's something that you really, really admire, you're going to emulate that. And if you've studied a lot, it's probably partially going to come out in what you do without even thinking about it.
It's not like we said that this show is a ripoff of Green Acres.
Well, it could be after the cornfield this week.
It was a bit Jeepers Creepers for me.
Oh, Jeepers Creepers. All right. Well, I do want to... those were kind of dealing with last week's episode, so I did want to get those out of the way. This week, for those who are keeping track, the glyphs that are going into the commercial breaks spelled mirror. We learned the M glyph this week. And the Observer was very, very hard to spot in this episode. I'm not 100% convinced that I spotted him. I did post a tweet earlier in the week, late Tuesday night. After three times of watching the episode, I finally found something that resembled the Observer. And so I did post that Twitter image out there. Basically, it's where Nina comes in and talks with Olivia. The scene immediately following that is back at the farmhouse, and we see the field, and we have the scarecrow in the foreground, and then in the distance...
Background.
There you go. Or the distance, we see something else. It's very, very small. It looks like it could possibly be a scarecrow. It could possibly be the Observer. To me, it looks like the Observer because you can kind of see what might be a briefcase kind of there as well. So what are your opinions? Is that the Observer, or is he not in this episode? Because this was Peter just randomly going after some missing persons report, and it was not ZFT or Fringe related at all.
I think it was him, but are we back to having him photoshopped in the episode?
Yeah, I think, you could definitely tell it was photoshopped when you looked at a zoom in of the high resolution image. But because it was photoshopped, because it looked like he was carrying a briefcase and had a bowler hat on, it was definitely him. And I owe you an apology, Daryl.
Oh, really?
Well, I got on Facebook and said, oh, there's a much better image on such and such site, Fringe Files.
Yep.
And actually opened it up on my computer at home instead of looking on my phone, and your image was every bit as good. In fact, he had a nice little box drawn around him and zoomed in. So,
oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's you should be apologizing for things much greater.
Okay.
than much greater offenses than that.
I'm sorry, I hear your child.
Get into that after the post.
Not here.
Yeah, post podcast show. We'll get into that.
Okay.
Just kidding.
No, you guys need a hug and make up now.
Yeah, we're gonna put a couch in here.
One of the one of the best scenes that I got out of this whole episode, and this pretty much made it the six for me, was Walter's reaction upon hearing about the farmer / doctor when he was talking about how he had to bury his child, and just the look on Walter's face, and just he looked defeated all of a sudden, and the weight of the world was on him, and you could just tell right then and there how important Peter really is to him, and that this Peter that was with him is totally oblivious to what's really going on. And I think we're coming pretty soon. Just, I think it's really going to hit the fan, and I'm just really excited to see this come up. But yeah, this was the scene of the episode to me.
Yeah, it's definitely, they are playing.
Reverend.
Huh?
I'm sorry, they're telling me to preach it, so I'm going to finish that with Reverend.
I see. They are playing with this theme. They're bringing it out, you know, with the whole the quote about the coffin or the grave of a boy who isn't there or whatever. Very interesting. That line that Walter threw out there this week was one of the – that whole scene right there was one of the better points of the episode for me. And I didn't find a lot to like about this episode, so that was one of the few things I did like. In fact, I've got a note here later. I'll go ahead and skip down to this. Clint, we'll come back to yours here in just a second. Just talking about the whole Peter and Walter thing and that final scene with the fishing lure, and where Peter is telling the story of himself when he wanted to go fishing with Walter, and Walter is just oblivious to it and wants to go fishing with him. And this is the new Walter that we see now, where he is appreciating and trying to build this relationship with this son that, you know, he lost when he was in the mental institution. He lost all of that, and really he had lost it before then. You know, here's a story that Peter tells about him wanting to go fishing with his dad, and his dad's too busy to go fishing with him. So clearly those moments were lost even before Walter ended up in the mental institution. But that was such a wonderful moment and Peter just lets him, you know, believe that Walter's invited himself to go fishing with Peter. It was Walter's idea to go fishing, because Peter, I mean, you're talking about how much a character has grown from the first couple of episodes of last season to now.
Yeah.
I mean, Peter is really coming around and really genuinely loving Walter. He still calls him Walter. Still haven't heard Dad or anything like that out of him. But I really love the way this relationship is coming. But it's all coming. And when Peter finds out that he is dead or from another dimension, it is going to hit the fan. And that, man, that trust and that relationship that is building right now, and Walter recognizes that, and it's not going to be good.
So I have the next comment. This is just a really silly comment.
Okay.
Which, I guess I'm in that kind of silly mood, but now we know why Liv's hair always looks so greasy. It's because she takes baths instead of showers.
Wow. Really?
So you got another comment there, don't you?
And she makes it her own personal sauna.
Well, she bathes in fart water. I mean, what do you expect?
That was actually an ode to my wife. That was her comment. I just had to throw it out there.
I see.
Yeah.
Those said, Aussies.
Yeah, she said, no. Well, now I understand why her hair is so greasy. She always takes baths instead of showers. All right. So when Charlie walks into the typewriter store, if that's what we're calling it, I guess.
Sure.
He seems like, and I don't know if it was just, you know, Kirk acting put out or whatever, but he seems to be in a lot of pain. He's holding his stomach. Do you guys catch that?
Absolutely.
Why do you think that is? Any thoughts?
I was wondering if he stays in one body too long, if he starts to have some weird physical side effects and they start to cause him pain.
That was my thoughts too, but then that would be like a Men in Black ripoff, and so, you know.
They're just borrowing liberally from other areas.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that crossed my mind, and this is totally a ridiculous theory, this is way out in left field, but if you remember, the machine broke I guess, while shapeshifter dude was converting from nurse to Charlie's body. At least we assume it did, because Peter handed Broyles the broken device.
It broke. I mean, when I was recounting the timeline earlier, my thought was that once he had finished shapeshifting, he broke it so that, because he was going to have to give it to them in order to make them believe that the nurse was the shapeshifter, but he broke it so that they couldn't use it.
Well, then that totally blows my theory.
Well, go ahead and throw your theory. I have no evidence of mine. Yeah. I mean, we didn't see it.
Which was that something about Charlie's parasitic infection is really messing this dude up from the previous season. You know, Charlie had the parasites and they were able to get rid of it, but he, you know, obviously all of his organs weren't whole.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he shapeshifted, it did damage to his body. And now he's in a lot of pain. He needs to get out of there quickly, would be my guess. But
yeah, I'm afraid Hannah's bringing up a point. He's technically not in Charlie's body.
Well, he converted the look own, and the feel of Charlie's body. But yeah,
I think I'm more along the lines with Courtney here, where he can only stay in a specific look or whatever formation for a period of time, and there are side effects of that. We saw him in every scene that we saw him in this episode, whether he was in, you know, when he was spying on Peter and Olivia, he was very sweaty, not to mention the really creepy look he had there. Obviously, in the typewriter scene, he's holding his gut and he's actually kind of gritting as he's speaking. But even in the final scene with he and Liv in the car, he still seems like he's forcing himself to appear normal. And I thought it was a really good job on Kirk Acevedo's part.
Yeah.
I thought he did a really good job in this episode, being Charlie, who is his character, but yet not quite Charlie, the Charlie impersonator.
Just being a little off.
Yeah, yeah, I thought he did a really good job.
Okay, well, I had a thought concerning Olivia's super hearing. So I'm wondering if it has to do with her Cortexafan induced state. Did something about going dimension hopping activate her, like they were trying to activate the twins in I can't remember the name of it,
that are more than one of everything?
Yes
Was it that episode? Yeah, that's right, it was that episode. Yeah
So I'm wondering if dimension hopping activated her, or is this the side effect that Walter was alluding to of dimension hopping? Well, you look fine, but so I can't decide which idea I like better.
I don't have any ideas on that. Alex Radu had an idea that involved earwax and how it might not be able to come back from one dimension to the other. And so her ears just got de-waxed in the process, and until she gets some nice wax buildup back in there, then she'll be able to hear supersonically. Yeah, I don't know, Courtney, exactly what the trigger has been and you know, what might else come as a result of the dimension hopping.
I got some really interesting feedback, or we did, but obviously I'll be reading it a little bit later, which deals with the dimension hopping. May add some further insight to that.
Okay.
But yeah, it could be.
Now, someone mentioned earlier about, I think, Jason, it might have been you, about how Peter was giving the orders to Broyles now. Jason, did you mention that?
I might have said something like that.
Yeah, it might have been Courtney during the recap. But we saw this scene where Peter and Broyles are, you know, walking down the sidewalk and talking about different things. And Broyles basically tells Peter that he has arranged for everything that Peter requested. New housing is included, so they won't be staying in the hotel anymore. Except for the C-130 cargo plane. What's up with that? Why is Peter even requesting a C-130 cargo plane? What could he and Walter possibly have need for that? Or what could Peter possibly have need for that and just thought he would, you know, try to put it off on the government to supply that? I mean, did he really think the government's going to supply him with this C-130?
Well, how do you move Gene around in style?
Man, you can move Gene around in a lot less, you know, sized airplane than that.
I actually had two thoughts there.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
One, that was the red herring. You're familiar with principle of red herring. Obviously, we've talked about it in the show.
I'm
but
just not sure what you,
know,
you mean by it.
Everyone, you know, Congress looks at the list and they go, C-130, there's no way you're going to get a C-130 for the fringe division.
But they give them everything else.
They give them everything else.
I see.
The other idea was that, you know, now that they're filming in Vancouver, I know I keep bringing that up, but they're going to have to be a little bit more liberal with their locations where their cases occur, would be my guess. And so they'll need transportation. They'll need a way to get to these different places. So they'll have the mobile lab and the C-130 that Walter can come back to and run stuff.
I see.
Just a thought.
That's an interesting thought.
That's not a very good one, but
well, it's better than your last one. It's better than Liv's greasy hair in the bathtub. All right, Courtney, I think the next ones are yours.
Okay, well, this was why I gave it a 6 and why I was so irritated with the episode. Peter was looking for disappearances like Olivia's,
right,
which is fine. That's what he should be doing. I mean, he is their special investigator or whatever, but we go and we see this episode and it had absolutely nothing to do with the pattern. We didn't even see a hint of ZFT, not a, hey, he might be connected to even they didn't even mention it. So to me, why did we need to bother with this episode? It was pointless. It didn't seem to advance the storyline any to me. Unless you consider just a couple things of Olivia's super hearing and Walter and Peter's relationship. Other than that, it seemed really pointless to me. Even the computer guy, for no brainer, had a really distant kind of weird connection to all the other ZFT stuff, and this one didn't.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of green, red in that guy's makeshift lab that he had set up. I couldn't agree with you more, Courtney. I agree 100% with that, and which is why I gave it a 4. It was almost like a total waste. The one thing I will add to that is we also saw the introduction of Sam Weiss in the final scene. I mean, it was just a waste.
I'm going to have to disagree.
Please do.
And the reason that I am disagreeing with that, not because I thought it added anything, but it... You know, some of the previous technology that we see with the I can't think of the name of the episode now. I said it earlier, the Wolf Bear Man.
Sure, the transformation.
Yeah, transformation. Uh-huh. How do we get there? How do we get to that point? And I don't think that is ever explained. This episode maybe adds kind of the missing link to that, whereby this doctor may have gotten some assistance in doing these things. From another organization, and that may provide, you know, the, kind of the early stages, early time trials. I don't know if it does or not, but it may set kind of a timeline for how long ZFT or maybe possibly another organization has been at this, because we see this being the very early stages, the transformation that happens on the airplane being the latter, more advanced stages, and we get a timeline of about 15 years or so, I think, which... He falls right in with when Walter went into St. Clair's. So,
yeah, I mean, perhaps. I mean, that's all speculation. I don't think there's any evidence of that.
Sure.
I mean, all the evidence that we were presented with was that this is an old farmer or doctor who wanted to have a son and tried to make it, and it backfired on him, and now he spent the rest of his life trying to trap and probably kill his son because... of what the havoc that his creature is wreaking on this little, you know, village that he lives in. So you might be right. There might be connections with, you know, that, but I think that's all speculation.
Yeah, it absolutely is speculation. Maybe I'm giving the show too much credit, but I don't think that they would show us a completely worthless episode like that. Besides the fact that we think the Observer showed up there, why would the Observer show up if it was completely outside of the realm of fringe sciences?
Right. I don't know. I mean, maybe he's just trying to keep an eye on Olivia, but I really don't know. I don't have a good answer for that either.
Okay.
Other than he's supposed to be in every episode and they had to stick him somewhere.
And my last thought has to do with Sam Weiss, which we were just talking about. I don't think that... because somebody mentioned, was Sam Weiss the one that made Nina's arm or something like that? And I don't think that he was. I think maybe he could be the expert on dimension hopping and helping you keep your brain straight. Because, and this ties into what April was saying in the chat room that I liked. She said that maybe Nina didn't lose her arm to cancer. Maybe she lost it because of a botched dimension hop. And that ties into my theory that Sam Weiss is the guy to go to if something happened to you when you're dimension hopping. He makes sure that you don't go crazy and helps you work through that.
I would completely agree with that statement. Yeah, I certainly don't think that he is an expert in robotics. I guess we'll see next week, but I think, yeah, he's definitely the psychologist.
Yeah, I think we were really led more to believe that William Bell created Nina's arm. And I even watched a video on Fox this week that they had about, you know, the enigmatic William Bell. And they point out that in his office that we saw last season in the finale, there is a prototype of Nina's arm kind of carved out of wood sitting on his bookshelf, which, you know, further perpetuates the idea that William Bell is the creator of her arm, not this Sam Weiss guy. And so I would agree, Courtney, with what you just proposed.
That's shocking.
Oh, it's not completely shocking. Nor is this comment that David Wu just made in our chat room. He says, if we ever get Fringe in 8 minutes, this episode will only take up 0.35 seconds. I agree.
I have a couple other comments, but these are just real general reactions to the episode.
Okay.
Peter's getting shot. When he almost got shot in the head, I had to rewind it and watch it like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Tried to slow it down. Awesome.
Yeah.
I thought that reaction was really cool. And then how he handled it with Broyles, how he played it cool and was able to lie to Broyles' face like that.
Yeah, but Broyles didn't buy it,
no,
I don't think.
No, he didn't, but, you know, Peter kept it pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of neat. And I cannot believe that we've had 2 episodes now this season with no William Bell at all in it. Especially after, you know, the big cliffhanger last season.
Yeah.
You know, you would have thought they would have transitioned from that.
Yeah,
not even so much. I mean, barely a mention.
I actually know when he's coming back.
You do?
I do.
Yeah. See, I've been trying to stay spoiler free.
So. Yeah, I don't. I have too, but I happened upon some pictures this week.
Okay.
And gave it away. So I won't reveal that though.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. Anything else in our food for thought section?
Just the website that was on fox.com/fringe. It was different cases, I guess, of stuff that we'd seen with the pattern. I forgot to go back and look at it when I got home Friday night. But you looked at it, Daryl, so can you maybe help me fill in here since I forgot?
Yeah, I didn't spend very much time on it, but it's at, like you said, fox.com/fringe, and you can click on it looks like kind of like a spiral, like a... almost like a galaxy would look like from the top down. And you can look at it in 2 different ways. One is the kind of the spiral galaxy looking way, and there are different yellow points on there. And each one of those is a study, a branch of science. And or you can sort it alphabetically. And there are well over 100 of these, ranging from astral projection to dark matter and, you know, ESP and all these sorts of other things. And so there are either articles or videos regarding each of these. And then what they're asking is for audience participation. So if you have an article or some input on this, evidence to it, you can actually upload that information to them to help... you know, the collective knowledge on this specific topic. And then you can also rate each one of them, whether or not you agree that this is, it actually occurs or does not occur, that sort of thing.
It's kind of like a Wikipedia for fringe sciences, sort of.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except it's more of a collection of independent articles.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And they link to actual websites, so some of them might be New Science Magazine, and you can only read a portion of the article unless you're a subscriber and you have access to the full website. So just keep that in mind, that they are, but it all is, like I said, it's linking to actual stuff out there. It's not stuff that they're just making up in some sort of fictional way.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And we'll have the link to that in our show notes area at thefringepodcast.com. All right, so let's get into our listener feedback.
What did you point to me?
I didn't have mine pulled up yet. Okay. I was hoping you did.
Yes. So we've got some feedback here from Brian. He says, "Hello, first time writing into you, but I've listened to every episode so far, and you all are great. Just an observation. I watched all 5 seasons of Alias and all 5 current seasons of Lost, and now I watch Fringe. In all of them, they had a shapeshifter of someone who took the identity of someone close to the main character. In Alias, it was her roommate. In Lost, it was Locke. And now in Fringe, it is Charlie. Also, it seems that in Alias and Lost, there are characters seeking eternal life on Earth, so it's just a matter of time before we have a character that can live forever on Fringe. Changing topics, I believe that in Fringe, they can only cross dimensions if they are dead in one of them. Watching the first episode in the second season made me believe that even more. I believe that Olivia died in the car crash in one dimension, but avoided it in another. Killing her in one dimension allowed her to travel back and forth. Also, in the last episode, last season, there were a bunch of people that were alive that were dead in our dimension. It would also explain why there's only one Nina and one Belle. Brian. I think that's a really interesting theory. Anybody else have thoughts on it?
I think it's completely plausible, but we don't have any evidence to back it up, really, so it would be kind of cool if it turned out right. But it seems like it could make sense.
Yeah, I agree with what Courtney just said. Plausible is a good word for that.
Plausible.
Yeah.
We need the big Mythbusters thing.
That's right. Yeah. It's a Mythbusters word, yeah.
It's not confirmed, right?
Right.
Yeah.
All right, well, I've got one here from our friend Ersin in Turkey, and he says, "The no-brainer strikes back. I'm furious about this last episode. It started with a ridiculously cheesy scene that was not at all shocking or even unexpected. It felt like they stole a plot device from a cheap independent horror movie.
Jeepers creepers.
When you hear something scary, you don't go towards it. Why don't they just make the guy walk oblivious to the mole and then suddenly pull down from below without any warnings? Why does he have to hear it, be suspicious, go to it willingly? Have these characters never seen a movie? What about the writers? Don't they know it's been done a million times before and it's not thrilling? The monster of the week was also ridiculous. Just as we were getting to a larger mythology, they're bothering us with a creepy mole kid? Why? An independent doctor does an experiment on his child, turns him into a mutant, and then kills himself. How is this relevant to the show exactly? This is worse than the no-brainer episode. In that one, you could at least theorize that the guy might be a disgruntled ex-employee of some big corporation related to the pattern. This guy is just someone who does something for himself and his son. The plot was also insultingly predictable to the point that it was downright boring. Right from the moment we saw the doctor find the body, I knew the mole was either him in a Jekyll Hyde trip or his son. The moment we learned that his son died, it was pretty much confirmed that the mole was his son. Insulting, I tell you. I can't believe they could do this to the audience, a significant portion of which consists of Lost fans who appreciate intelligent, original writing. I can't believe they got the nerve to give us such a cheesy, predictable, and irrelevant episode. The only thing I liked about it was that Olivia was apparently going superhuman, so I give that part alone 3 points, which brings the rating to a total of 3 out of 10. Please don't let them take this show down a road where heroes belongs.
Ouch.
I hope I can make it to the live podcast tomorrow. I hope someone gives a reason to make me feel better about this episode. Stay cool, Ersin.
So I guess it really wouldn't help him out any if I said I agreed with everything that he just said.
Not if he's looking for reasons to appreciate this episode. I think Clint might be the only one willing to offer a hand in that.
The only thing I can say, and this was not a good episode by any stretch of the imagination, but in my opinion, it was much better than last week.
Wow.
We got
no way.
Yeah, we got the proper Charlie to Jessup ratio, about 10-1.
Jessup didn't have a single line in this episode.
Right. She was exactly.
Yeah, she was
exactly
in one scene.
That's exactly how it should
Astra
be.
Astra delivered her line, yes. You know, which was great, yes. By the way.
So.
Okay.
And we look forward to your feedback next week to tell us how you really feel about the episode.
And next time, don't hold back.
Yeah, yeah, really. All right, Courtney, I think you've got some feedback.
Hi, guys. I'm following your podcast since the mid of the first season, and I really enjoy it. I'll give this episode 6 Super Hearing Olivias. More than theories, I have to say that I am a little disappointed with the path that Fringe is taking. I hate feeling that I'm watching X-Files all over again. I love Fringe when it's truthful to its own mythology. I really, really hope that in the next episodes, everything comes back to the original plot, if you know what I mean. What do you think about Olivia shooting Peter? Did she shoot wrong, or Peter evades the bullet? Can't wait to hear this week's podcast. Take care. Anna in... Oh, Mexico. Well,
yeah. That's our...
Hello, Anna in Mexico.
Yeah. It's the first time we've gotten feedback from that country, so welcome.
Yeah.
Hola. Cool.
There you go.
So, a couple things. Yeah. I think Daryl sent this one to me intentionally after my rant on the whole X-Files deal. But
no, I didn't.
I totally agree with Fringe is good when it's sticking to its own mythology, and I think its own mythology is not having stupid standalone episodes like this one. So they need to get rid of all of those standalone episodes and continue with the whole overarching theme. And then with the Olivia shooting Peter, I actually did slow it down, and he didn't evade the bullet. She just purely missed. So
does this mean we're grande in Mexico?
No, not yet, because we only have one.
I see. All right, Jason?
Okay. Hey, before I say this, I gotta stick up for this episode just a little bit.
Okay.
Okay, not every episode can be a steak. Okay, every once in a while, you need an episode that is the dinner roll and the salad. I mean, if you have
this
a diet...
This wasn't even the dinner roll.
But just hear me out. Okay, maybe it's just a salad.
This was the parsley episode.
But, we've had a couple in a row. But this was the salad and the dinner roll episode, because if you're just on a main diet of just primarily steak, you're going to end up in a tub full of fart water.
Okay, well, I would agree with
that's where you get greasy hair. They're looking out for us.
Okay.
Well, I could agree with that partially, but at the same time, the meal has to go together. You can't just have, you know, like your pickles and licorice and cookies and chili. And
what's wrong with that?
the meal has to go together, and this was like licorice at, you know, I don't know, a steakhouse. That just doesn't happen. And no, I disagree with you.
I'm going to have to
anyway.
Agree and disagree with Courtney on this one. First of all, I agree that Fringe is the best when it sticks to its own mythology. And I think that everyone here and everyone that listens to our podcast, we're all intelligent. We all love the mythology of Fringe. We all wish that it would stick there. That being said, we heard from the get-go from J.J. Abrams that one of the things that caused people to fall away from Lost was the fact that there wasn't a complete storyline within an episode, that you had to basically keep up with all the episodes. And so I think we're going to see, I don't think we're going to see a move to the pure mythology, which is what we all like to see. I think that he's trying to do something different with this show, to have, you know, complete beginning, middles, and ends in the episodes.
Just to build on what you're saying, can we not get a piece of the mythology though? I mean, I guess maybe we got that with Olivia's super hearing and Gnarly being where he was. Maybe that was the piece of the mythology that I was supposed to hang on to and not be so irritated about.
Yeah, they threw us about a 45-second bone there at the end.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think you make, as much as I hate to say it, I think that's a pretty good solid point. All right, Jason, on to your feedback.
Okay, this is from Shane, also known as Observing from Guthrie.
Hey, that's just
it
up
says,
the road from
howdy,
here.
Howdy, guys and gal. I just wanted to tell you that this is the best podcast ever to come out of Oklahoma. How many podcasts come out of this state?
Thousands, I'm sure. No idea.
Millions upon millions.
They all
do. That's what
we do
in Oklahoma when we're not noodling.
Right. I wonder if there's a noodling podcast.
We need to start one up.
Yeah.
That would be so exciting.
Nothing goes better than recording equipment in murky water.
We would ruin the equipment in the first episode.
That's right. All right. Sorry. Back to your feedback there.
I'm proud to say I'm a fellow Oklahoman. I'm a big fan of you and the TV show Fringe. I think it is great how you go into such detail after each episode. So after all that, my rating is 6. Let me see here. How am I going to say this politically correctly? Hold on. 6 wet fingers after touching a watermelon.
Oh, I have a sound effect for that.
Oh, do you now?
I do.
Watermelon.
That's actually Clint doing watermelon from last season.
Watermelon.
Worth every penny.
Yeah.
Well, bye for now. I'm looking forward to watching your podcast on Sunday. Yours truly. P.S. I came up with a wonderful new drink. It is Boone's Farm and Kool-Aid mixed. You can use any flavor. P.P.S. You must only drink it when you are noodling. I must make a point out there. Do not ever drink alcohol and go noodling. Do not mix the two.
I can't imagine those mixing well, but at the same time, I can't imagine them not going together.
Which is probably why the sport was invented in the first place.
Yeah. That's right.
Hey, y'all, watch this. I bet you won't stick your hand in that hole.
They say that the number one phrase in the state before somebody dies is, hey, hold my beer and watch this.
That's probably true. All right, so let's get some feedback here from Bob in Washington.
Hi, it's Bob. Great podcast. The mirror in the back room of the pawn shop, and you guys probably already saw this, but the mirror reflects a different machine than the one that's being typed on. The only thing that's active on the typewriter in the current dimension is the typing wheel itself, but the keys don't move. However, the reflected one, and I think that's a mirror into the other dimension because it's a completely different machine and the keys are moving on it. So that's a portal into the other dimension. Okay.
Yep, Bob is exactly correct. The other thing that strikes me odd about it is that we see the keys typing. We don't see, you know, the hands pushing the keys down. So while it seems to be a portal into the other dimension, we're not really seeing the full picture of what's going on in that dimension. So it's not a clear shot into that other dimension. So that's a little bit peculiar to me.
Me too. All right, I've got some feedback here from longtime listener Zero Fights. I hope I'm saying that right.
I think that's right. Okay. Alan is his real name.
Alan,
yep.
From Alan.
In the great city of London.
London.
Yep.
Excellent. All right. He said he wants to briefly give some thoughts about the episode. He says, is this the first standalone episode? This case seems not to be related to ZFT or the pattern. Even Walter is surprised about what Dr. Hughes did. Does the Scarecrow hint at something about the episode? Any thoughts?
I think it was just a motif. I don't know that it really was more than that.
Yeah. Jeepers Creepers, Children of the Corn.
That was the only creepy thing about the episode.
Yeah.
On the last live chat in the Fringe podcast, somebody mentioned that in the first episode where the Observer walks in, the building is named Gunrow and Dundler. The anagram is said to be underground. In this episode, we have a creature that buried himself underground. I didn't really like this episode. I found it weak. In fact, that the episode seems to be inspired from the old episode Unleashed. Is there any other Fringe that can be used in the show? I gave it 5 flying frogs.
There was one other thing he mentioned in there, 0.5.
Check out a pick. Is that what you're talking about?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah. It says prosper. Is this a hint for the next episode?
Yeah, we started to bring this up earlier, yeah. And I kind of said, well, let's talk about that in the feedback section. So it's a picture, and we'll put this in the show notes area. It's a picture of, is it the cash register? Is that what that thing is? When Charlie walks into the typewriter shop, and we're kind of at the perspective of the shop operator looking out towards the window on the street. And in the digital readout The digital readout of the cash register says prosper. So do you guys think that might be our episode clue for next week? He did point out what our episode clue was from last week for this episode with the underground anagram. What do you guys think about prosper?
Yeah, I think I already said that was my thought.
Yeah. I think it's probably our best possibility. One of the things that I noticed was when Olivia was going through some of the paperwork that she got from the sheriff, there was a six-sided star, not really a Star of David, because, you know, a Star of David is like a solid line, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a Star of David, turned at 90 degrees, but completely solid, filled in. So don't know what the purpose of that was, but that might be the only other thing that might be that I observed as a
clue
for next week. All right. Well, this comes in from Melissa. She says, So Olivia is repeating a Greek phrase that Peter and his mom used when Peter was a kid. So obviously this is talking about last week's episode. It's easy to forget that sometimes we are dealing with Peter 2 from Earth 2, but has no memories of Earth 2. As in, before he was sick at age 7, as I too have had a drink of that flavored water. Olivia was visiting mom from Earth 2, so has repeating this phrase jarred a memory from Earth 2 that Peter had before age 7. Has he been, indeed, activated? Or was this phrase a memory from after the age of 7, Peter 1 from Earth 1, as it were? And if so, how did Mom 2 know about it? Or is this where Mom 1 has disappeared to? This also begs questions about which Walter left which Peter. Did both Walters leave both Peters? Is Peter confusing his memories of the two Walters, and Walter has just patiently put up with it because he can't explain the discrepancies without explaining to Peter who Peter really is? Did the alternate Walters ever really make different decisions, or would we find that they have both made exactly the same decisions and became exactly the same people in different timelines? I wonder if Walter is loopy because of his interdimensional travel. I give the episode, now they're talking about the current episode, I give this episode 7 naked mole rat men. Could have done with more answers and fewer chewed body parts. And I've also decided that things in life are no longer cool. They're fringe-tastic. Thanks for reading, Melissa. I've decided that I'm going to adopt her fringe-tastic as my sign-off. I'm going to start saying, stay fringe-tastic.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys were able to follow that or not without reading it. It was very complex, talking about Peter from this dimension and that dimension, Walter from this dimension, that dimension, and Peter's mom from that dimension versus this dimension. She's just got a lot of questions about the interactions between the different dimensional personas of the main characters. How's that? You guys want to add anything? You have any comments to what she had to say there?
The only thing I picked up on was she asked if both Walters had made the exact same decisions, so were the exact same in both dimensions. And I don't think that that's possible, because Walter's decisions would also be based on other people's decisions. And if those people in those other dimensions are making different decisions, that's going to make Walter different in each dimension.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't think they've made the exact same choices either, just because I'm of the opinion that Peter died in this dimension and not that one. Walter from this dimension stole that Peter from that Walter. So I don't think they've made the same choices either.
Me too.
Okay. I believe Courtney's next.
Okay. Hi, Fringe peeps. First, I just want to thank you for taking the time and effort to do the podcast. I thoroughly enjoy it and refresh iTunes every hour just to see if a new episode is up.
Sorry, let me just say that you don't have to check iTunes every hour. Just check it Sunday night and then Monday night, because the podcast will come out one of those 2 days.
Save yourself a little effort. It'll be okay.
There you go.
And you can hear our SSRVs in your ears. within 24 hours.
That's right.
This new episode just makes me hate Agent Jessup even more. Like Rachel, the writers have not given her much purpose, although I actually like that she was only in two scenes. The less I see her, the better. I agree. I just feel like she is a copycat of Olivia with the ponytail and pantsuits with the collared button-up shirts. Astrid worked her own original version of the pantsuit fantastically. I know there is more than one of everything, but Fringe does not need two Olivias in this reality. In New Day in the Old Town, Josh Jackson's acting was bad, but Before I Am Martyred and Crucified, it was so much better this week. Peter in New Day was off character with his words and actions. I blame the costume coordinator, too, because the black jacket made him look even stiffer. But happily, Peter is back to his old self, and I like that he was caring enough to pick her up from the hospital and go with her to all the locations. Now, I know that Fox says that the Observer was in the field a few seconds before we see Jessup in the Hughes home, but they can't convince me that one little dot blur is him. I believe that he was in the cornfield at the very beginning of the episode, right above the A in Pennsylvania, the first time we see Lansdale, Pennsylvania at, she gives a timestamp of like 7 seconds.
Yeah.
Overall, I did like the episode and gave it 8 scorpion mole rat men. Unfortunately, the homework load high school has given me has delayed me in my fringe watching, but I will always be sure to listen to your podcast. From on the Mississippi River, Julia.
Did you go back and look at the Observer sighting that she pointed out there?
I didn't have any way to get that timestamp on any of my recorded items, so no.
I'm looking it up now on fringefiles.com. I'll see if I see anything.
I took a look at it. You know, I'm not going to wholeheartedly shoot it down because, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not convinced the one that I mentioned is the Observer, although she did say that Fox had confirmed that was it, and I would like to know where she saw that. I would say it's possible, but I'm more inclined to think that it's another Scarecrow, but I'm not sure.
By the A in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
There's two Scarecrows there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to come back to the food again real quick. From now on, I think I'm just going to give it something you would get at dinner. Not only am I going to give it a Bunsen burner, I'm going to give it some food that you would get. If it's going to be the steak or what comes with it. So the way everyone's talking,
okay.
I'm going to say that this is that tiny little bitty plate that has the green beans and what they say is bacon, but it's not really bacon.
Faking.
And this is what this was.
Faking. All right.
Okay. Hi, this is Sebastian from Canada. Episode 2 for me felt like the mixture of an eighth of Jeepers Creepers and the rest X-Files movie and one or more X-Files episodes. It didn't get me excited as much as the season premiere of Dollhouse. That episode to me was much better than this episode. Theories. The actual mole, Charlie, will be killed, mold out, or change bodies by the end of the next episode and start robbing banks. Or it can be another shape-taker doing it, and Charlie can just be running away from the awesome power of the French division. Olivia will remember that William Bell gave her instructions. What William Bell gave her instructions for. And it will tell us that Bell isn't much of a bad person. Maybe the people he surrounds himself with are. Keep up the good work. Same time, same locale, different fringe.
I will not comment on that because I have information that I picked up in spoilers that I would be using to.
We would have to kill everyone that's listening.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Clint.
All right, I've got one here from Interdimensional Dave. He says, quick note to you all, Dr. Sam Weiss. Time out, I'm going to take a tea here.
Okay.
This is what makes, I think, our podcast great. I'm not saying that there aren't other podcast, but we have some very intelligent, very well-connected listeners.
Okay.
I just wanted to thank everybody out there that sends in feedback, particularly feedback which we would have no other idea about other than from you guys. So thank you guys for sending in your feedback. Continuing, Interdimensional Dave says, quick note to you all, Dr. Sam Weiss introduced in the last episode, I believe, is a send-up to the former Red Sox catcher Sammy White. After his playing days for the Boston Red Sox, Sammy White opened up a bowling alley in the Brighton section of Boston. As J.J. Abrams is purported to be a big Red Sox fan, I believe Dr. Weiss, which is German for white, is a salute to Sammy. kind of neat. Interdimensional Dave.
Cool.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't put it past him. I think that's a kind of a neat concept. It makes sense to me. So.
Okay, that is cool. That's Interdimensional Dave.
Interdimensional Dave.
Yes, and he also sent in some other feedback. And so, Dave, thank you for your multiple feedbacks. This one is from Emily, and she says, "Hey, guys, this is Emily from Portland. I want to start off with my Bunsen burner rating. I give it 4 poorly designed tunnel systems. I have not been very pleased with this first couple of episodes so far. I felt that Agent Jessup had little to no point in this episode. If I recall correctly, she didn't even have any lines. I'd also like to know what made her feel that Mr. Hughes might have killed his wife and child just by looking at the Bible and a note sent by a pastor. I guess it was just a plot device to exhume the bodies so we would see that the body had burrowed out. Still, weak writing, I think." And then she makes a comment on the whole shapeshifter confusion from last week that we talked about. And she says, "Lastly, I wonder if Olivia's superhuman hearing was what Walter was alluding to when he was talking to Olivia early in the episode and said something about her being okay. Keep up the good work, Emily." Maybe. I kind of think that he might have been referring to the headaches or some sort of something that would cause Olivia to be, you know, in some pain or something like that, where the super hearing doesn't really seem to be painful, annoying maybe, but yeah, possibly. Jason, are you all done too?
No, I got one more.
Okay, go ahead.
"Hi, Courtney, Jason, Daryl, and Clint. A quick note to give my impression and rating of the episode 2, season 2 show. I have to watch it a few more times, but I thought this was one of the best episodes ever. I gave it 9.5 unzipped flies. It was just a great episode. Creepy, moody scenes. Olivia and Peter were great together. The characters were interesting. One of the characters, the last one to get eaten by the creature, was an actor from American Graffiti. Don't remember his name. And the father of the creature, well, wasn't he in Star Trek episode or movie? Really enjoying seeing Peter being more proactive than reactive. The only thing I didn't like so much was the way the creature died so quickly with the car. But oh well. Love the episode. Take care. Ingrid from Quebec."
Jason, you're our kind of resident, although Clint's quite knowledgeable as well. I think you had mentioned that the sheriff was in American Graffiti. Do you know anything about Mr. Hughes and what he's already been in? Either of you?
Oh, you would bring that up. I can look real quick while you just do some filler.
No, I didn't recognize him. I know that the cop had also been in The Untouchables. He's one of the...
Wow, I haven't seen that in forever.
Yeah, the lesser
he was the accountant.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Wow, that was a good movie.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, all right. Well, let's listen to a little feedback. We got this from our good friend Chris in New York.
"Hi, guys. It's Chris from New York, lost passenger in the chat room. I just wanted to share a theory that actually goes back to season 1. It really doesn't have much to do with what we're dealing with right now, but I still thought of it worthy to share, and I don't think I've shared it before. If I have, then forgive me, but my theory is that Ella is being given Cortexafan, and the reason I believe that is because if you go back to the episode Bad Dreams, Ella says something about having to go to the doctors to get a shot, and the episode Bad Dreams very heavily deals with Olivia's, Olivia being given Cortexafan as a child. And Ella says something at the end of the episode about going to the doctors, getting her shot, and she said that she felt like a monster had been put inside of her. I could be very heavily paraphrasing that, but it was something to that effect. And like I said, this whole episode was about Olivia and her dream state with this Nick Lane. And Olivia's response to Ella was, "Don't worry, it's just bad dreams." So that's why I believe that. And also, if Rachel is not advocating it, I think that she at least knows about it. And I think that that's why throughout season 1, especially in the episode of The No-Brainer, when Ella is trying to get Peter and Olivia when she's trying to tell them her story, Rachel's like, "Oh, that's silly. Be quiet. Don't lie to them." I think that's why. And, you know, I could be wrong, but that's my theory. And that's all for now. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, so Chris is proposing that Ella is being treated with Cortexafan, and Rachel is knowingly allowing it. You guys think that could be going on?
Plausible.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to give it the big plausible stamp.
Yeah. It would bring in some relevance to both of their characters if that were true, which we're still waiting for at this point. Okay. Yep. And finally, we got this in from Veronica in New Jersey.
Hey, Fringe Podcasters. It's Veronica from New Jersey. My rating for episode 2 was 8 bottles of Tums for Charlie. It really looked like he needed it before he was going to get to the typewriter. I wanted to read you guys a quote from a book I just read in my freshman English class. It's called Bless Me, Ultima by Rodolfo Anaya. And it's set in New Mexico during World War II. It's a pretty religious book. And the quote is, "Man was not made to know so much. The old ladies cried in hushed, hoarse voices. They compete with God. They disturb the seasons. They seek to know more than God himself. In the end, the knowledge they seek will destroy us all." I thought this quote tied in really well to the whole premise of Fringe. Anyway, I can't wait for your next podcast. You guys are awesome, and I was really excited when you used Put On by Modest Mouse at the end of the last podcast. That's a great song. I'll see you guys soon. Bye.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Veronica. And her phone kind of cut out a little bit there, so I was going to reread the quote she had mentioned there. It's in the book called Bless Me, Ultima, and it says, "Man was not made to know so much. The old ladies cried in hushed, hoarse voices. They compete with God. They disturb the seasons. They seek to know more than God himself. In the end, that knowledge they seek will destroy us all." Isn't that good?
Yeah.
I like that a lot. So, Veronica, thanks for calling in with that quote, and definitely seems applicable to Fringe. All right, before we get out of the listener feedback section, I wanted to give a couple of other shout-outs. First off, I wanted to thank John Bailey, and he is a friend of our podcast, and he has called in a few times. He called me a couple of weeks ago and wanted to know if we had a promo, because he was going to talk about our podcast. He does a podcast over at Bat Wings Beat, Bat Wings plural, Beat, B-E-A-T, .blogspot.com. And he does kind of a podcast spotlight, and he featured our podcast on episode 36 of his podcast, and it was very, very complimentary. And John, I really appreciate that. I also want to thank those who have left us reviews on iTunes, and we're always looking and encouraging you guys to give us feedback, good, bad, or otherwise. As long as you're honest and fair, that's all we ask. And so you can check this out on iTunes and give us some feedback. And we did get one Twitter response this week, which I thought was funny, and so I thought I would include this. This is from Team CSG, and he says, "Anyone else find it interesting that Olivia will receive Matrix / Jedi training from a guy who sprays disinfectant into bowling shoes?"
That's pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. And with that, let's get into random thoughts from Canada.
Hi, this is Patty from Canada, and here are my random thoughts on A Night of Desirable Objects. I have to say that the scarecrow really creeped me out, although he wasn't doing his job very well since the crows were landing right on top of him. And I'm not sure if it was a continuity error or if there were two scarecrows since they looked different in different scenes. I did like to see that Canadian train go by, but I suppose it was there just to cover up the sound of Raymond screaming as he went down the hole. I'm guessing the episode was named after the fishing lure because the victims were lured into the ground by what I am calling the monster of the week, Creepy Bald Schmeagle. Why was Walter using a Polaroid camera? He can learn to use high-tech equipment in his lab overnight, yet he can't manage a digital camera? You'd think Astrid could scour one of those up considering the other stuff that she's had to acquire. I thought the way that Walter said, "the grave of a boy who is not in his grave," sounded very prophetic. While it might be obvious to think of young Peter and his empty grave, it seemed more like Walter was realizing that history was unfolding in a way that was once foretold. I love seeing the flying frog scene, and I decided that they were trying to show us that the frog glyph is supposed to be representing jumping through time. I see that Olivia's hands are still shaking, and now I realize it's not from stress, which was the implication from last episode, rather the same shake as Nina and Jones had after they had done some traveling themselves. I think shapeshifter Charlie is still recovering from the mouth implant, since he does some weird mouth movements the first time we see him, otherwise he had a peanut butter sandwich for lunch that day. And how does the shapeshifter know so much about Charlie that he can imitate him? Did the implant device get brain information too? It seems a bit just too unbelievable to me. There were more Bible themes in this episode again, but I'm not taking much more from that Madonna Jesus statue, other than it was hinting to us about a woman and a child. And did anyone else notice that when Walter said the word mutant, that Jean mooed? And it wouldn't be a complete episode unless Olivia is in the interrogation room shoving pictures at a perp. It dawned on me later, though, that the reason Hughes didn't want his blood taken was that his son's blood would share the same DNA and then would implicate him. I was kind of amazed how Nina just waltzed into Olivia's examination room when she was finishing her doctor visit, although it did give us a chance to see another one of her black bra collection. And poor Olivia, she now has the superhero ability to hear people all over the neighborhood fart in the tub. That's it for me in Canada on the fringe of America.
All right, Patty, thank you for that. A couple of comments I'll make is regarding the, are we supposed to believe that the shapeshifter gets all of their knowledge and mannerisms and thoughts and memories via the device? And to me, that's not too unbelievable. I think that's got to be the way it is if they're going to pull off the illusion that they are somebody else.
Yep.
So, oh, my other comment was I had no idea that if you smashed up Smurfs that they became a what's the word I'm looking for?
Paralytic.
Paralytic, yes. Smurf juice will paralyze you.
I don't have any other comments.
I see. That's my throw-out comment of the week. All right. With that, let's get into a little twinge.
All right, everybody, this week's Twinge poll is asking what Liv's next symptom will be from her recent travels. We got lots of good feedback. Levi, who I believe is from the Fringe Report, said, I'm thinking it's going to have to do something with the headaches that Sam was talking about. Telepathy, maybe? Mike McDowell said, by almost shooting Peter, she is showing signs of craniorectosis. Which, left untreated, leads to chronic halitosis.
Very nice.
Bogdan says her hands will start shaking uncontrollably. Man, I can't read today. What's my deal?
It's not just today.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. I didn't learn to read so good. Kim says Olivia's going to start hearing other people's thoughts. She's going to be the one to out, not Charlie. Hmm. That's an interesting theory. What do you think about that, Daryl?
I like that idea.
We've got a comment from Red Viking 4 in the chat room says that she will start wearing a size 10 bowling shoe. Alex had a good comment. He said next symptom will be the ability to whisper at levels audible only to Olivia so that she doesn't blow out her own eardrums. And of course, Patty. From Canada.
Okay.
Always always hilarious. She'll be able to predict Walter's food of the week and then bring some to Walter.
Oh, that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Which we didn't have a food of the week this week.
We didn't, yeah. Which was shocking. I was just very disappointed.
Yeah, very. It was just a non-fringe episode.
That's it for Twinge. I do have a couple of comments. We had to change our hash sign this week to #TFPTwinge. This is based on Courtney's recommendation. We're getting some overlap with, I guess, some political commentary. So if you want to reply, just put in your Twitter #TFP, which stands for the Fringe Podcast.
Oh, I was wondering.
Twinge. TWINGE. And if you'd like to provide just normal, everyday feedback, you can also put the #TFP Twinge, and we'll put it in there.
Yep. And we should probably have given our contact information when we did our feedback section, but we might as well do it now. And you can, of course, always send us either email or a voice memo. If you're using the iPhone, use the voice memo application. And you can send that to feedback@thefringepodcast.com. You can also leave us an iTunes review, which I did mention, or just leave a comment on our website.
They can call us on the Fringe phone, 304-TFP-CAST, also known as 304-837-2278. And should you be lucky enough to locate us on Facebook, you can find us there. However, I have one request. If you find me on Facebook, I will add you because you've obviously worked hard to find me. However, don't just assume I'm going to add you without you saying, hey, I know you from. If you don't tell me that you know that you are a listener, then you won't get added.
And I'll second that a step further, saying that I probably won't friend you on Facebook, regardless of whether you tell me if you heard me on the Fringe podcast.
I see.
But Twitter me.
And I have a third opinion on that. If you friend me on Facebook and I don't know, if I have no idea who you are, but you look like you're a real person and not some sort of spam thing, I'll friend you anyway. Well, let's move on to our final segment of the podcast, the quote of the week.
Yes, we had our quote of the week. It got out kind of late. Sorry, it was a busy week. But we did have four choices, and we ended up with one winner by far. So I think Daryl's got that clip for us.
Peter! Peter! They said I can ride in the back with the body. Can I?
Sure. Of course you can. Stay out of the medications, though. Please.
So there you go. That's your winner. That's the one I voted for, so good choice, everybody.
I think it's the one I voted for, too.
This? Really?
I think so.
Apparently that's what most everybody voted for since it won.
Yeah.
Yep. Sorry.
Thanks for that.
Okay, so this week's quote of the week, I think I watched the show four times and still could only come up with three semi-funny, even sort of worthy quotes to include. So we don't have four to choose from, only three, and they are as follows.
All right, the first one we call Hidden Ninja Sword.
There you go. Thank you. You take care, Agent Dunham.
I will.
Let me get that.
Peter, I'm fine.
I know you are.
What?
Well, just looking for the hidden ninja sword.
Well, that one wasn't covered by insurance.
And our second candidate is Plan on Urinating.
How's it going, Walter?
I plan to urinate in 23 minutes.
Good to know.
I'm telling you because I'm going to need help unzipping my fly. I can't feel my hand.
All right, and our final candidate is called Victims of Gene Pool.
Yes.
Has Sheriff Golightly? Special Agent Olivia Dunham. This is Peter and Walter Bishop.
I don't remember calling the FBI.
Well, your office has filed 6 missing persons reports.
7 now.
All under the same circumstances?
Same as the others, just disappear.
You're damned if I know what to make of it.
Well, we're all victims of our own gene pool. Someone must have peed in yours.
I do love that final quote.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I can predict which one will win. Nevertheless, it will be fun to vote.
It will
so
be.
So those will be up as soon as Daryl gets me the clips. And keep an eye out for that. And I will also announce it on Twitter when it's up and ready.
Very good.
Excellent.
And of course, you can follow each of us on Twitter. Simply go to thefringepodcast.com. You'll find each of us there in the top of our page, in the header area of our page. You can just click on that, take you to Twitter, and you can follow us from there. All right. Any closing comments, guys?
Negative.
All right. Well, until next time, stay fringetastic.
Stay on the fringe.
May the fringe be with you.
I guess Jason's not going to sign off anymore.
He's done.
And just like last week, we have a song this week that is very, I don't know. Here's a song that we thought tied into this week's episode.
don't care what the weatherman says. When the weatherman says it's raining, you'll never hear me complaining. I'm certain the sun will shine.
I don't care how the weather vane points. When the weather vane points too gloomy, it's gotta be sunny to me when your eyes look into mine.
Jeepers creepers, where'd you get those creepers? Jeepers creepers, where'd you get those eyes?
Gosh, y'all get up, how'd they get so lit up? Gosh, y'all get up, how'd they get that size?
Golly gee,
when you turn those heaters on,
woe is me.
Got to put my cheaters on.
Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those creepers?
Oh, those weepers,
how they hypnotize.
Yeah.
Where'd you get those eyes? Them there
to put my cheaters on.
Weepers, creepers, where'd you get those creepers?
Oh, those weepers,
how they hypnotize.
Knock me out.
Where'd you get those eyes?
Where'd you get them?
Won't you put me wide?
Don't you try, man.
Pay to advertise.
Tell them something.
Where did you get those eyes?